Welcome back or welcome to the Single Track Podcast. I'm your host, Finn Melanson, and this is another episode of the Golden Ticket Talks in which we chat with first place female finisher at the 2022 Javelina 100, Devin Yanko. Devin is a professional trail and ultra runner based in Howard, Colorado, and in addition to memorable moments during training and the race itself, we talk about perseverance and handling adversity throughout her career, being open about and sharing so much wisdom around her physical and mental health to the ultra community, as well as thoughts on being a sponsored athlete over the years in our sport. One thing before we get started, this episode is brought to you by Gnarly Nutrition, Kodiak Cakes, and Inside Tracker. Simply go to the show notes of this episode for some of the best deals on all of their products. With that, let's get started. All right, Devin Yanko, it's a pleasure to meet and it's a pleasure to have you on the Single Track Podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to talk to you.
So, gotta address the probably the biggest event here. You just secured a golden ticket to Western States, so congratulations are in order. But I thought I saw on your Instagram, it wasn't your original intention heading into this race to head back to Western. You had other things in mind. So can you talk about where your competitive mindset was heading into this race?
Yeah. So when I signed up for this race, it was kind of earlier this year, I had this plan to run 500 milers because I was turning 40. And what else should I do but run way more hundreds than I've ever run in a year? I thought it was going to be a fun way to celebrate. But the second one, I was ill and I had to stop at like mile 7. So basically, I didn't run it at all. So I added Javelina at that point. So from my perspective, at that point, I was like, it's going to be 100 miler number 5. Like, there's no way that I'm going to be partying in the desert. Like, I'm going to bring my Hawaiian shirt with the cat riding a shark through space and like wear that and hang out in the back of the pack. And like, so as the summer progressed and like my slam still didn't go according to plan, like I ended up, the June race was kind of the start of my health issues. Well, they aren't the start of my health issues in my life, but for this year, it was like they just continued to not get better. I fought through a finish at High Lonesome, which I'm proud of, but like it's such a different style of course. Like hiking's pretty cool. But then when I took off my other hundreds and Javelina kind of became the goal, like I didn't really change my mentality about the golden ticket, in part because 3 weeks before Javelina, I was diagnosed with lupus. So like my life had just kind of, it was like, yay, I know what was wrong with me, but like my life kind of exploded a little bit. And given the way my body had been reacting, like my body had been kind of unreliable. Like my training is going great. And then I just like, I don't know, would develop some like crazy issue like at Hennepin where I got pleurisy and like, you know, that's pretty bad news bears. So like going into Javelina, I kind of was like, I don't know what body's going to show up. And so I still kind of had the same mentality of like, I mean, I still was like, I could be partying in the desert, but I also was like, but I also could have a good day. And so I kind of went in with this mentality of like, what do I want to control? Like, I want to control my experience. So whatever like pace I'm able to run, I went in with like, I just went in really calm, just being like I was basically like, this is about me. This is about me. This is about me. I'm just having my own experience. People would be like, you're in whatever place. And I'd be like, don't care. This is about me. And that kind of even persisted throughout the race. So yeah, I was like crazy competitive and like I know how fast women in the field are, but like I was so, I don't know, like calm that it just didn't really, like all of that part really didn't really, it wasn't a thing to me.
Well, you mentioned the diagnosis there a few weeks before the race, and I'm curious, especially given that you are an elite athlete, what mental skills are you deploying to handle all of the uncertainty and the variables that appear to be out of your control?
Yeah. So it's kind of funny because Like I had numerous people kind of congratulate me instead of like commiserate because they're like, oh yeah, like you have so much discipline. Like a lot of the things that you have to do are like, oh, it's going to be fine for you. Like if you were like a not active, like, I don't know, person who ate a regular diet, like, you know, it was kind of like, oh, whatever, like you'll be fine. You can change your diet. You can do these things. No problem. Cause it's part and parcel of like competing at a high level.
Yeah.
So like that aspect, at least the first week, I kind of took that mentality like, yeah, like here we go, here's my plan. And I like, you know, built a kind of a race plan for life. And that's great. But I also then kind of had like major fallout from like my emotions were all over the place because like then you're like, oh, wait, like there's no race there. Like I'm not going to get a break from this ever. It's chronic and incurable. And yeah. While I can do better to control it and like learn what my own triggers are and things like that, it's still, I kind of feel like I'm walking down a dark alley and could be mugged at any moment. So like it's, I kind of rode this a lot of highs and lows. And I mean, I had points where partially because one of the medications I took like made me like really depressed. And I was just like, I'm not doing this. I'm not taking medication. Like yeah. I'm not changing my diet. Screw it. Like the statistics say, if I do nothing, I'll be dead in 5 years and fine. Like, I don't care. Right. Like, so I don't want to like be like, oh, I'm just mentally just snap my fingers and just like went into it. Like
I
allowed for all of those emotions because like I have to grieve a life in which like my life, obviously I've had health problems. Like this is a long time coming diagnosis. The average diagnosis for most autoimmune conditions takes over 6 years and like hella medical gaslighting. People are like, you're fine. And you're like, okay.
Really?
I don't feel fine. Oh yeah. I mean, I now can look at some of the experiences I've had. I've been in the emergency room 2 times in the last 3 years for like really bad stomach pain. And I like tell the doctor there, I'm like, look, I've run 100 miles accidentally on a broken foot, right? I can handle a lot of pain. So if I'm here, I'm telling you like my insides feel like they're about to be ripped out. And they're like, there's nothing wrong with you. And it's like, I've just had that kind of time and time again, like there's nothing wrong with you. And I'm like, okay. I mean, I trust you. And then, you know, I've had other diagnoses over time. So I do have other autoimmune conditions. And each time it's like, okay, like I'm not crazy. Like there is fundamentally something, you know, going on. So when I got the lupus diagnosis, it just kind of brought in some of those like unknowns, like the stomach pain that sent me to the emergency room, like that can be explained by lupus. Like some of these other times where in the past where it was just like nobody knew, it's now explained by that diagnosis because lupus attacks everything. So getting a diagnosis, like I just had to kind of be like, well, like my hopes of one day being a healthy person, even though I've never really enjoyed being like super healthy, even as a kid, like it kind of just closes the door on that even being a possibility. And so you just kind of have to take a beat. And like people were very supportive when I posted about it on social media, but like, it's also something that you're like, okay, initial support is great, but like it drops off really quickly. And then you're like, oh wait, I've got the rest of my life to deal with this. And so I kind of had to deal with that process also while being like, oh no, and I have to get ready for a race. And like, how do I get my head in the game?
Yeah.
And I did and I didn't. So I know you've read my Substack. So like I posted something where I was like, I have the best perspective. And then like 3 days later, like the day I left to drive down there. So last Wednesday, I was like, lost the perspective. Nope. Lost it. like I spent like 8 hours in the car just being, but that's the thing. So mentally, like the skill that I employed was kind of like, yes, on one hand, I'm all about feeling your feelings, but while I was driving down, I was also being very conscious, like my headspace is not in a good place. Like, okay, like what strategies do I have to employ? Like, how do I need to reframe this? Like, what do I need to listen to kind of put myself in a position that like I go into the race not stressed out and freaking out of like what might happen.
Yeah.
And I did, man, I mean, by the time I got to Arizona, I had kind of like gone 180, like back to super calm and back to kind of accepting whatever happened. And I kind of resolved that like the name of the game was like just being calm, because I was like, I can't control my body, but I can control my mind. And if I control my mind, then I can still have a good experience despite like whatever happens with my body.
Mm. Well, you mentioned your Substack. It's excellent. I've read every post. We'll link to it in the show notes. I'm not sure which post you said this in, but you said that your version of healthy has always been, quote, tenuous at best. And that really resonated with me. And I guess my question there is, given that it's been a relative constant throughout your running career, has your ability to persevere through it always been on like an upward trajectory of getting better at that piece? Or has it been like rocky throughout the years?
Yeah, I mean, it was like when it first started happening, when I first started like missing races because of getting sick and just feeling like I would get like blindsided, right? Like I'd be training really well. And then I would just get like, I used to joke that if somebody sneezed in my county, like I was going to get sick. And like, I definitely struggled with it because it kind of just felt very like unique to me. I'm like, everybody else seems to be able to show up at a race and not get sick. Like, I think I missed Comrades like 4 years in a row because like I'm like pulling out race week kind of thing. And I'd like to think it got easier, but it's like always hard when you make a plan and then suddenly the plan goes awry. And like part of the hard part about like chronic illness is like, I think I've posted this meme on Instagram. It's like, is it COVID? Is it the flu? Is it my period? Is it like my illness, or is it just a Tuesday? And like a lot of it, like, one of the reasons it doesn't get easier is because like there isn't a very easy way to determine. Yeah, like I have taken so many COVID tests this year because like every time I felt ill, I was like, well, this must be COVID. I haven't had COVID. And I was like, this time, this is must be it. Like, and it always, you know, it never was. But like, that's what's hard is like, there's no real good way to kind of see yourself sliding that direction. And it, like this, the way this year went, it's like, I just was going through a stressful period of time, which is one of my triggers, but like we moved house. Like I had like some work stress and life stress. And like, I just kind of started feeling a little off and I like got blood work done and it was like, oh, you have like the lowest ferritin I've ever had. And I was like, oh, it just must be that plus stress. Like I'll be fine. Right. And then, you know, a month later when I'm still not fine and another month later when I'm still not fine, that's when you're like, oh yeah, maybe this is not great. So even this summer where I was like, clearly there's something wrong. And I kept going back to the doctor and, you know, like, we'll get the iron problem fixed. And like nothing was better. And finally, I went to my GP and I was like, this is not getting better. I need to talk to a rheumatologist. In 2020, I had seen a rheumatologist and they had diagnosed me with what they called latent lupus, which is kind of like undifferentiated connective tissue disorder, which means like you kind of look like lupus. You're, as my new rheumatologist says, you're kind of quack like a duck, but you're not quacking that much. But that rheumatologist told me that I could not develop regular lupus. So he was wrong. So at least I knew to kind of ask for like that, to go that direction with my doctor. And so my GP did a referral in August and it took until October for me to get in to see somebody. So, yeah.
I want to get to Javelina in just a second, but I have one more question on this front. I'm fascinated. One thing I appreciate about your Substack is just the way, and the way you present yourself on social media, you don't hold back when it comes to describing just the mental and physical hurdles that you experience as a runner. And it's an interesting time because we just saw Tim Tollefson's video about body dysmorphia come out. I was watching this Aravipa film about Eric Sensman, and it kind of just, it wasn't a film of triumph. Like, it talked about him really suffering through the Cocodona 250. And it seems like we're in this really interesting era of openness and willingness to share more of the, not necessarily darker, but just less glamorous parts of our life. I'm wondering if you can talk about your decision to be open about your own struggles and maybe the impact it's had on your career and your relationship with the community.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to do my best to not actually get emotional when I talk about this. Yeah. I mean, most people have seen Life in a Day, that Billy Yang's film, from 2016. So most people are aware of my experience in high school, being sexually abused by my basketball coach. So a lot of my like openness in life is a byproduct of that, because that was a period of time that was markedly about secrets and not talking and, you know, holding back the truth. And I had to stand up against somebody who had been doing this for a very long time. And I stood up against that person alone, and, you know, got really crapped on by a lot of people.
Yeah.
But me standing up actually, when I finally like stood my ground and was like, I'm following through with this and this is what the truth is, like, it opened the floodgates for other women to come forward. And, you know, by the time he was put in prison, there were 10 women on a no contact order. And then my first experience with like really, you know, like that was obviously an individual experience, but like the Seattle Times decided to do an article series called Coaches Who Pray. And so they took my story and they did an investigative series, which uncovered a huge problem like this in the state of Washington. And so this article series actually won a Pulitzer Prize. I like ended up on Good Morning America and all this kind of stuff. And ultimately, the article helped get state law changed in the state of Washington.
Wow.
And so like, to me, that was just like, look at the power of truth, right? And like, when, like, look what happened to me when nobody else spoke up. Like, nobody else there. I was not the first person this happened to, but I was determined to be the last at the hands of this person. And it was like, look at the power of what this can do for other people. And it just gave me a lot of confidence to be like, if I need to be the voice, like, I've already been through that experience. Like, yes, I lost all of my friends. I was called all sorts of horrible things in the media. And then everybody was backtracking like, oh, you're great. And you're like, you know, so it's like now, like everything subsequently that I share, like feels really pedestrian compared to that, you know, because like the consequences of me being like, I'm having a hard time, or like, I am sick with something, like, I know, based on, you know, this is 20 years ago, like the number of people who continue to reach out to me about like the impact of what I did back then on their lives now, it's something that I'm like, I don't know who I can be helping, but like, if I share my experience, if one person feels less alone in their experience, whatever that is, then like, that's why I share, because I would love that. Like, I would, like with my lupus diagnosis, the handful of people who reached out to me and were like, let me be your support, like, let me help you, like, that's been amazing. And so it's like, that's what I'm trying to provide, is like, I don't necessarily like want to be the poster child for X, Y, and Z, but like,
yeah,
I'm also just I'm a helper, and I like to, you know, if my story helps someone, that's really important to me.
I like what you said there about look at the power of truth and look at what it can do for other people. And then you said, once you execute on those things, everything else you do in your day-to-day life seems pedestrian.
Yeah.
In comparison, it's almost like you're leveling yourself up. You have this newfound power. That's incredible. I want to loop back to that in a second, because there's a couple questions about sponsorship I want to cover towards the back half of our conversation. But I do want to get to Javelina for folks that are excited to hear about your experience there. When I was doing research for this episode, I didn't realize that you have quite a bit of history there. So you ran 1452, I think, back in 2015.
Yep.
To win it. And then I think you DNF'd last year. So you've experienced the highs and the lows of the race. What part of you, what day were you expecting to have based on the roller coaster you've had at this race to date?
Man, I mean, I should say my pace plan said 14:30 for this race. So like I clearly, that's what I thought about my fitness.
Yeah.
But like, I also had no idea, like given new medications, new diet, new this, new that, like I had no idea how my body would react. I went in with the attitude that like, I'm crazy fit and like, I hope that's what it is. Like I did a track workout race week and I was like, why am I running a 100 miler? I could run like a huge marathon PR right now. Like I was running like 5:20 pace at 7,000 feet. Like, and it was 24 degrees out by myself in the dark. And I was like, I think that's, you know, that's a good sign, but it's 100 miles. So with my other experiences, like I kind of throw out last year because last year it was kind of silly that I was there anyways. Okay. Because last year I have never really had injury problems in my career, but last year I had back to back basically broken femurs. Like I got like stress fractures, like gotcha. Out of nowhere, probably because of stress in my life. But so I had only been running for 10 weeks when I lined up for Javelina last year. So okay. Like from zero. Yeah. Then that race week, I can now say like, I know that I had a flare and it, like I literally the day before Javelina last year, I was like at urgent care getting a COVID test because I felt that bad. And so last year, just I was kind of like laughable. And then I ended up, despite the fact that it is not a technical course and there's like a very small amount of rocks, there's rocks and they are annoying. But it's like a mile of them. And I actually tripped. What took me out is I tripped and I landed on my knee that had been one of my injury sites earlier in the year. And like, I was like, nope, no, I'm like, I have no ego involvement in this. I'm not like sacrificing the rest of my career over this one day. Because I started compensating like really badly immediately. And I was just like, no, we're good. We're going to go home. We're going to sit in the pool and then we're going to come back in our onesies, our unicorn onesies and have a dance party, which is what we did. So 2015, like this year isn't even comparable to 2015 because 2015 Javelina, one, the course is significantly different.
Okay.
It was longer and you went both directions. So like now it's only run in the fast direction, but that you would do machine washing style on that course.
Gotcha.
And I think it was like a mile and a half longer, 2 miles longer. And it was 97 that year. But that race in 2015 was only my second 100 miler. And it had been 7 years since I had run 100 because it's just like not my favorite distance. And so I had focused on other stuff. And in 2015, it was like the first year I had taken kind of 2 years to just run marathons and work 1,000 hours a week because my husband and I had a bakery in California. And so I had not been able to travel to do ultras. And so that Javelina, I was like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I was like, I know I'm decently fast, but like I had only run Vermont, you know, in 2008. And so like, that was a pretty magical day, but like, I also like sat in a chair and cried for a while and was like, tried to quit. And like, you know, like just, and I ended up second overall in that race, which was pretty cool. And I ran the last 40 miles of the race faster than the guy that won. Wow. So like, you know, going into this year, I take a lot of confidence knowing like there's only one person who's run faster than me, even now that the course is different. And that only happened last year. And because I've already run a 14:23 this year, like going in, I can, you know, like I said, like I wrote down 14:30. I can confidently say like, if things go relatively well, a sub 15 hour is very much in my capabilities. And I just ran according to that. Didn't care what other people were doing, kind of laughed. Like I, you know, after loop one, when technically I was still on like 13 hour pace, I'm like, hey, if somebody ahead of me can run that pace, like our sport's in for a treat. Like, yeah, it's nothing to do with me. I'm not going to run faster. So, yeah.
Well, I was lucky enough to be on the ground watching the race, and I'm curious to know if there were any theatrics in the race for you, because I saw Heather Jackson for the first lap or two come through, and from my perspective, she looked unreal fresh and smooth, and I was like, wow, like, this is her first 100. She's in for a special day. And then she ended up having a great day,
yeah,
you know, when all things shook out. But I'm curious, like, how did her race to any extent impact the way you ran? And then maybe also talk about, like, you know, when you passed her and when you took the lead, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I, you know, even though everybody's like, you went out so fast, I was like, no, I didn't. I was like, my heart rate was like 120 on that first loop. Like, I was felt so ridiculously relaxed. Honestly, like, it was the same thing last year when, like, Camille went off super fast. I was like, this is not a sport in which, like, I can, like, you know, give you the sidearm and, like, impact what you're doing. Like, you are going to run according to your strategy. Like, I am a big Heather fan. I long time loved her. She's the only reason I follow, like, Ironman. And so I was like, I think it's great. Like, if she's having a great day. Also, it's so unknown for her. This is her first ultra, not just like her first 100. It's her first ultra. And she had done a 100-mile gravel race the week before and Kona 3 weeks before that. Like, I'm going like, maybe we're just like us ultra runners.
Amazing, by the way.
We're on a different planet and she is going to be up there. And it really didn't, you know, my strategy the whole time was like, I'm just doing my own thing. Like, the number of times I said that when Sandy was pacing me on loop four was like, I think that's all we said that loop. I'm just doing my own thing. I will say, like, this wasn't like a perfect day for me. Like I said, I had to change my diet dramatically because of lupus. And so I hadn't eaten sugar in a month. So when the first gel I took did not stay with me, I was like, that's not great. I, you know, usually don't throw up an hour into a race. I don't usually throw up at all, but
yeah.
So I was like, "Welp, gels are out." And then, like, I'm trying to drink like my Gnarly. I'm sponsored by Gnarly, and like the Fuel 2O like always works well for me. I take a sip of that, and it was like, "Nope." I was like, "Ah, okay." So we're gonna. I was like, "Roctane," like, "Nope." Like the first two loops, I would just be like, "Well, I'll just get it in there and see how much I can keep." But I didn't feel like. I kind of just like laughed and was like, well, I'm going to have to figure something out. And, you know, I eventually tried blue Gatorade. And I'm like, maybe it's because it's so chemical and not made with real things that like, and maybe it's because I associate it with being ill because that's the only time I drink Gatorade. But like, that was the only thing that worked. So like, I literally ran 100 miles just on like small amounts of Gatorade.
Wow.
And so like, I just kind of was like, I was like, I feel really good. My legs feel fine. Like I'm pretty solid with like I know that I can run a long time without like a huge amount of calories. And so I just like stayed cool, like focused on the moment, like got through each lap. And when I got through three laps and like people would be like, you're in whatever place. I'd be like, don't care. You don't need to tell me. Like, I don't. It's, I'm like, I can't do anything about it. I'm running amazing. I'm running what I'm running. And so when I picked up my first pacer, Sandy Nypaver, I picked her up at mile 60, whatever. And she was like, you're 11 minutes back of Heather. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, cool. I was like, still don't care, but cool. Like, I was like, I just kind of was just excited to kind of get out of the heat of the day, you know, because like it's hot in the desert, even when it's not as hot as usual. And so the only time that I really like acknowledged like that things had changed in terms of like, oh, like this is about to get real is when we left Jackass Junction, I had taken back 8 minutes on Heather in 10 miles, 11 miles. And I was like, and so that was why we were like, just keep doing what you're doing. Cause clearly I don't need to speed up because I'm catching her. Right. So I every time I get to Jackass Junction, I was just like, free money. That's what I call downhills because I love downhill. And so we're going along and you're kind of like wind your way. And, you know, I'd see people, but it'd be like, I was like, what is she wearing? I don't know. And like, when I finally saw her, I definitely had, I was like, oh God, here it go. I might have used a lot of swear words because I was like, I had been so in such, I mean, people saw in the live stream, like loop one, I stop and hug Jubilee, like loop two, I'm having a dance party. Like that was my vibe. And like, I didn't want to lose that by like suddenly being in the race. So I had my like freak out, like, kind of moment, like, is this going to change my mentality? And then like, I ran up on her. I was like, Heather, I love you. Fist bump, you know, like you're doing amazing. And she was like, and she actually thought that Sandy was like the second place person. So she thought that we were like working together. She had forgotten that like pacers were a thing. And so we distance ourselves from her very quickly. And then Sandy was just basically like, and now we just go back to doing what you're doing. Cause like how strong I was like at that point, like in my mind, it's like, somebody would like to kind of, if you think about the math of like how hard somebody, if I'm running this hard, like how hard somebody is going to have to be running to catch me, like that just, you can kind of be like, okay, like I'm going to rest on the fact that I'm a strong finisher. And like, if somebody catches me, they're going to have to be moving.
Yeah. I guess one thing I wanted to ask you, and this is a question we ask a lot of folks that are just generally successful in the sport. If you look back at the training you did for this race and the way you executed on race day, are there any variables that stick out to you that are just critical for success and that you think the listeners might take from and apply to their own training, like if they do Javelina next year or in years to come?
Yeah, I mean, for me, like the biggest thing that gives me confidence at Javelina is like not just my volume, but like the amount of work that I'm doing at like the upper end of the spectrum. So like the faster workouts. So the nice thing, so I was supposed to do Leadville and Run Rabbit. And part of the reason I chose not to do, especially Run Rabbit, is like, I was like, I don't want to race if I haven't done workouts. Like I'm sure I could run 100 miles. Like I have experience in the legs, but like, what gives me confidence is like that workout I had on Tuesday, like most of my workouts had been like that, where I was like, damn, I'm fast. Like, you know, and I'm doing like, I did a couple of workouts that were like at 9 or 10,000 feet and I was running like 6:20 pace. Right. And it's like, so for me, it sounds kind of funny to be like in 100 miler, like you should have speed, but in a race that turned out to have like 10 of the fastest times this year, like, I was really comfortable at like 8 or 9 minute pace, like all day, right? Like that feels very pedestrian. And then I also knew, given how well I was holding up, that like if it had come down to it and somebody had caught up to me, like I felt like I would have had gears. Like I would have been worried that I was running on fumes, but like I would have that confidence. And I think that that just makes a difference. Like you need to be able to run this pace a lot. Right? Like 8 or 9 minute pace, you should do a lot of work there. But I also think that you need to be able to feel like you are comfortable going faster. And I think that that's what, like, my style of training is very much like marathoner-esque in that, like, I think you need some volume, but you also need to be doing workouts.
One more thing I want to ask you on the Javelina front. You mentioned Camille earlier, you mentioned the course record. It sounded like you ran 14:36 on a relatively imperfect day for you. I think of you as one of the fastest runners in the sport. I also think that course record is amazing. I paced a runner that ran 13:45 last weekend, and we both looked at each other and were like, what Camille did a couple years back is just insane. Would you ever want to come back to Javelina to target that record?
I told Jubilee that I was retiring from Javelina, but... I don't know. Like I think, and I know Camille has said this too. Like she thinks sub 14 is possible. And I think sub 14 is possible on that course for a woman. I don't think that there are that many women who are capable of that currently. Like, I think Camille's capable, but I think I'm capable of it. I also don't necessarily care about proving that necessarily. Like, I am 40 and I have a limited number of years in which to spend out my peak fitness. And so, like, it's just a matter of, like, is that goal important enough to me to pursue? Like, I don't know. Like, I kind of feel like I have two of the best performances ever there. Like, yeah, that can be good enough. And, like, there are other, like, yeah, I want to run sub 14 on a course somewhere. And I think I can. And I want to do that. But Javelina isn't the easiest place to do that. Just like Umstead isn't the easiest place to do that, right? Like, Umstead has more climbing than Javelina does, and I ran 14:23 there. Like, so I mean, it's obviously like a curiosity, but like, I don't know. We'll see.
I want to come back to your blog here before we close up, and I apologize because I might be a little bit long-winded before I ask this question. Very curious after reading some of your posts about the way you've navigated your pro career. And if I understand correctly, you are mostly unsponsored at this point. And it sounds like it was an intentional decision as well. You've said, quote, "The requirements to be elite or pro are creating a division in the sport. It's a struggle for a very limited resource. It felt like I had no ownership over my running. The marketing team did. I was being asked to race while injured," end quote. For folks that aren't subscribed to your Substack yet, hopefully you get a flood of new subscribers after this. Can you go into detail about your decision to step away to some degree from this element of the sport?
Yeah. And I mean, I'm taking sponsorships. Like, I am open to it. I just, when I was younger, I've come up in the sport in which sponsorship has changed a lot. Like, yeah. In my early days, my first ultra was in 2006. In those days, free shoes was a deal, you know? Like, so, like, I've gone through the many changes in the sport. And I, at different times, have been sponsored by different companies. And, like, I've had some pretty, like, bad experiences that just kind of illustrated, like, I need to make sure that if I go forward with a sponsorship that, like, it's like a partnership and that it's mutually beneficial. You know, I've had people be like, "Oh, we will never make road shoes. So if you want to be sponsored by us, you have to give up the road." And I'm like, wow. I've run 30, like 40 sub 3 hour marathons at this point. Like, I like the road. I like road ultras. I've done amazing at Comrades. Two Oceans, like, these are my favorite things. Like, I'm not, like, at that point I was like, that makes no sense. And then that company marketing turned around and they ended up making road shoes, and I just kind of, like, laughed, you know? And I was like, so that's just the thing. It's like, sometimes you go in with the company at a certain, when they're, like, focused on a certain thing, and then they're like, "Hey, actually, we changed our mind. Can you change who you are?" And I'm always just like, "No, like, but you knew who I was before." So I'm a little confused. And, you know, like, after Javelina, and, like, those years, like, I was sponsored and I was being paid a salary by some companies. And I think the reason I chose to step away is, again, kind of going back to that, like, helper, like, altruistic nature, is I had two very good years under contract with a company, and I had an option year come up. And when the option came up, they offered to not pay me, even though they had been paying me. So they were like, "You can have this demotion, and we're going to still represent you the same way and say that you're the same sponsored athlete, and we still want you to do the same amount of work, but we're just not going to pay you." And I was like, that's bad for the sport. Like, if I take, and that was what I really thought was, like, one, like, I'm too old for this shit. Like, I'm like, you're not paying my bills. The only person that thinks I'm sponsored is the IRS. Like, I you know, like it just for the amount of money, like I was like, that's a huge ask. And not only that, if I take that deal, then you think it's okay to offer that deal to other people. And like, and that's why I say there's this disparity, because like, if you look across the landscape, and I understand like non-disclosure agreements and stuff like that, sure, but in ultra running, there is a representation of professionalism that doesn't actually match up with what, like everybody who is professional isn't actually being paid, right? And that's part of like my issue is that like we don't know what other people's deals are. People are taking deals that they shouldn't. You know, people who should be paid are like underselling themselves.
Yeah.
And then the people who are being paid, right? So some of us have to have real jobs, and then the people who are being paid have a actual professional life and don't have the stresses of, you know, having a regular job or like asking your boss for time off or something like that. And right. And so it becomes this kind of like self-perpetuating thing. Like somebody who can jet set off internationally 4 or 5 times a year will ultimately like keep their opportunities going because they can do that. Like I can't afford to leave the country multiple times a year. My baby donkey would miss me too much. So
you said that at one point, maybe back in 2006, 2007, it was a big deal to get shoes in return for repping a brand. Yeah. I'm wondering, given the problems that we're facing today in the sponsorship landscape, do you see any evidence that they're being worked on and they're changing, and maybe 2 or 3 years from now, it will be a non-issue because it's been put out into the open, it's been publicized, and people are addressing it?
I think that one of the reasons, like I always feel like I'm so old in this sport. I'm not old. I am not old. I don't think I'm old. Don't at me about that. I'm just now becoming the age of most of the people that I was competing against in like 2006. Like back then, everybody was 40. Like I think it's so funny when we act like somebody who's 40 did something. I'm like, that was our whole sport for all of its existence. I actually, even though it doesn't personally benefit me, because I have been told by people I've reached out to for sponsorship that I'm too old to be sponsored, I think that's having cool younger individuals who haven't had the model of like, oh, I'm just going to get free shoes, come in and like have contracts available, actually is making the newer generation, it's like becoming part of the change, because now there that opportunity exists more readily, as opposed to people who've been in the sport a long time. You know, maybe it's like if you've been sponsored most of your career and now you're in the later years of your career and somebody's like, I'm only going to give you shoes. You're like, well, I kind of like beans. I'll take something. Right. So I think having new people in the sport is going to help change that. I actually interviewed Heather Jackson yesterday. And I basically said to her in the podcast is going to come out next week, I was like, I'm excited you're here because you have been integral part of changing triathlon into a sport that is financially sustainable. And her personally has done such an amazing job building a brand around who she is. Like the amount of people who followed Javelina because of her, like we need that. Like, I feel like the brands are kind of hedging their bets a little bit. Like the brands don't have to come with it because the athletes aren't together and being like, this is what we deserve. And I think having someone like Heather, who's like been a part of that change and like already kind of gone through these growing pains, can be really helpful. So I am hopeful that things will continue to change. I would really like to see brands like Hoka, you know, who have like the power at some of these bigger races, like actually help incentivize races to, I don't know, have prize money, because you know, it'd be really helpful for athletes, prize money, right? Because yeah, like sponsorship is great, but like me as an unsponsored person, like where everybody's like, oh my God, Javelina, so amazing. You must have, somebody like thought I was like, how much money did you make? I was like negative $1,500 because I had to pay for my own way and there's no prize money. Like there are ways that we can kind of, the brands can get on the athlete side and athletes can band together to like collectively move this forward. And that's what I hope will happen.
I'm really excited to listen to that episode with Heather Jackson. And by the way, shout out to the Women of Distance podcast. Excellent show. I wonder if she brings different perceptions of what it means to be properly compensated, perhaps because the triathlon world is maybe a little bit more older and sophisticated in that regard. I don't know, but it's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and I think she does. Like, I think she was surprised that, like, she actually asked me, like, I think it might've been off air because I might've talked to her ear off like for 45 minutes after we stopped recording. But like, she was like asking me about like what races, like where do you go to be competitive? Do you find the prize money and that kind of stuff? And I'm like, not ultra running. Like, that's the hard part is like, and it's also like, I can be like, point to a race that has prize money, like Run Rabbit, and be like, riddle me this. Why is that race not more competitive? Like, why do people not show? Like, I actually, after I did Umstead, like the race directors were like over the moon and they're like, help us. Like, why is our, like, why is one of this amazing historic race that everybody should do? Like, why is it so underrated? And I was like, I wish I had the answer. Like,
yeah,
it, our sport in that way, like, defies logic. You know, so it was like the North Face 50 had a prize purse, got a very large competitive field, but like Run Rabbit, not right. U-Rock, which was like a super solid attempt at having like a championship style race, couldn't get off the ground. And I'm like, why? Like, I don't know what the answer is, but like, I think that's what we kind of need to figure out collectively, like on the professional end. And I think, like you said, like the having the conversations makes a difference, right? Yeah. Because like, if everybody's just like off in their own little silo, not having a conversation, like how are we ever going to change anything?
Amen. One last thing I want to ask you before we go, you took the golden ticket, yes, to Western States, and you have history there. You have a podium finish. I guess this question is two parts, but what makes you excited to return and what does Western States mean to you?
I actually told Heather off the air. I should have got this on air, but I told her I blamed her for taking the golden ticket. You know, because I didn't go there for that, I didn't know how I felt. I didn't even, like, once I had it, I was kind of like, actually just stoked I won. Don't need to think about running another race right now. But, you know, I didn't say no. And I was listening to a podcast with Heather on my drive home, and she was talking about Kona and talking about, like, why she kind of continued to go back and, like, why she even went back this year. And it kind of boiled down to, like, it is an honor to be a part of that field and to, you know, to qualify your way into a race like Kona or Western States. And to kind of, she just was like, I wanted to honor that, like, that chance. And I was like, God damn it. Now I have to run this race. Like, I literally, she said that. And I was like, I don't know when I will have another opportunity like this, right? Like, I may never run another golden ticket race. Like, I don't know. I can't guarantee that if I wanted the opportunity in the future that I would have it. And so that really just kind of like made it very clear for me. It's like, this is like an opportunity that I just can't say no to. And, you know, in 2020 and 2021, I was actually really excited to go back to Western States and like stoked based on like how I was running and like that kind of stuff to kind of like be like, yeah, maybe if I don't sit in a chair for an hour and cry, I could do really, really well at Western States. Like, maybe. So I think it just kind of brought back that stoke. And like, for me, as a master's runner, like I feel like I'm freed up to have like a broader experience there, you know, like, yeah, like I believe I could compete for the win, like on a good day. Like, I have the speed, but like, there's also a master's course record. Like, there's top 10. There's like, there's also just like being there and being a part of a community that has like been amazingly supportive of me. Like, Craig Thornley is like, he just like manifests himself in the woods when I need him. Like, whenever I'm having a hard time, it's like Craig Thornley appears and like, is like, Devin, you're fine. Remember Western States. Like, this is what you do. You come back from the dead and you kill everybody. It's great. So, you know, like to just kind of honor that and honor the opportunity and like be on that stage. And how I felt at Javelina gave me a lot of confidence to know that, like, you know, Javelina was a lot of hype this year. And it's like, if I go into Western States with that same kind of like, I'm just doing this for me, like, I don't really care whatever anybody else is doing mentality, like, how much of a positive experience I can have, like, that just makes me really excited to kind of go there and just give it a shot.
Well, Devin, such a pleasure to have you on the podcast. Great to get to know you. And thanks for going into such great detail and storytelling and providing so much value to the listeners. We'll make sure to link to everything in the show notes, your social media, the Substack, et cetera, the podcast, Women of Distance. Anything you want to leave the audience with before we go?
No, I think this has been really fun. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully we can reconnect before Western. We're excited to follow your training and any other races that crop up. But again, thank you so much.
Yeah. Have a great one.
Thanks for listening. Before we sign off, if you are a fan of the show, please consider supporting us with a rating and review in your podcast player, a donation on Patreon, or the use of our sponsored discount codes in the show notes. Thanks again. We really appreciate your support, really appreciate you listening. Until next time, I'm your host, Finn Melanson, and you have been listening to the Single Track Podcast.